The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning on Wednesday. It's the 7th of January, just about 7:30 in the morning. Glad to have you with us here on the show. You're also listening to us on WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge on the PCTV Select app and at WTBRFM.com. Lots of different ways to watch and listen to our radio show. We're glad that you're along with us this morning. We got kind of a sloppy morning out there today. We're getting some rain, and there has definitely been some icing overnight. On my drive in, the roads were actually pretty good in the city of Pittsfield. But, you know, your mileage may vary. You got to watch out for those slick spots, especially the higher reaches and places like that. So keep an eye out for that if you're going to be driving. There is a two-hour delay today for the Pittsfield Public Schools. I heard that this morning. So, and that's probably for the best. Definitely slick in the driveways and the walkways. You know, those are the dangerous places. The roads are probably fine. It's your own driveway that you got to watch out for. So keep an eye out for that this morning. And then it's all rain, I think, a little later. I got a great show for you this morning. We're going to be speaking with Rose Wessel, a program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass, a program of Berkshire Environmental Action Team, or BEAT. And we're going to be talking about peaker plants and battery storage and wind farms and pipelines and all kinds of interesting stuff and just updates from that area. And I know that Rose, certainly no stranger to the program. We've talked about this before, but we'll get some updates, especially to some of the addresses that they've done to boards and commissions in the city of Pittsfield recently that did open some eyes. So we'll talk about that here this morning indeed. First, let's get the weather forecast and find out what we've got in store for us for the rest of the day from the National Weather Service.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect until 11 a.m. EST this morning. Today, mostly cloudy. Snow, freezing rain with a chance of rain this morning. Then a slight chance of rain and snow showers this afternoon. Little or no snow accumulation. Ice accumulation around a trace. Highs in the upper 30s. South wind around 5 miles per hour, increasing to west 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of precipitation 90%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Cold with lows in the upper 20s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it from the National Weather Service. And yeah, we do have a little sloppy weather out there this morning. Some ice, some rain. Didn't see much snow or sleet or freezing rain, but there certainly is some ice. So the evidence of freezing rain is definitely out there. So keep an eye out and be careful out there today. All right, Morning Drive this morning. Welcoming Rose Wessel from Berkshire Environmental Action Team, and she's joining us by Zoom this morning. And welcome, Rose. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. And it's always good to get the updates on all the things going on. Peaker plants, certainly in Pittsfield here, have been in the news recently, and we've talked about them here on this show before. There are lots of, I guess, ways that these older aging plants can be modernized or changed. So let's jump right into that. There's one really big one here in Pittsfield, right?
Yeah, we have one left. We used to have another one, and same campaign. We approached the power plants and said, you're going to have to decarbonize eventually. What are your plans? And the owners of the small one off of the end of Doreen Street said, you know what, you're right. And they shut theirs down and dismantled it. And they're converting a big one in West Springfield over to battery storage. They're working on that. So Pittsfield Generating, everyone knows those three stacks in the middle of town. That's the one that's left. And we've been talking with the owners for a while. They're interested, but they're not moving forward very quickly. So we've put up a petition a couple of years ago. There's hundreds of signatures. It's still open, actually. If folks want to go to nofrackedgasandmasks.com, look on the homepage for the Peaker issue, and you'll find a link to the petition there. But it's hundreds of signatures and dozens of comments calling on the plant to convert. A lot of folks mention health impacts of living close to the plant. So it's really time for it to move on. We held a community meeting with residents in Allendale, which is right next to the plant. It's less than 1,000 feet from Allendale School. And of course, that's a nice, dense neighborhood there. So a lot of people live right in the shadow of that plant.
Yeah.
Back in May, we held a community meeting, and 100% of attendees said they would like to see the plant stop burning fossil fuels. They're tired of living with it. It's noisy. Some people report itchy eyes and throat when it's running or worsening asthma. When we said, what about battery storage? 63% said yes or maybe, and nobody said no. So that was interesting. Because
these are the neighbors right around the plant. So they're the ones, the stakeholders, right? They have to deal with this on a regular basis, right in their backyard, literally.
Yeah, and most of them prefer the small risk, and it is a very small risk of a battery incident. A lot of times when people talk about batteries, they say, oh, no, they blow up. It's actually a very small risk, and it's getting smaller all the time. They prefer that small risk of it maybe happening to the guarantee of pollution every time that thing runs. And it runs several times a year, so they deal with it.
Yeah, I would think that the explosion risk that people think about kind of feeds from the way that we take our news, right? Is that it's all the sensational things, the big things that happen. Nothing makes news unless something big happens, right? It doesn't get into our radar until something like that. So, and it's always the spectacular things that happen. It's always the explosions and the, you know, all that's what makes the headlines. So, the incidences of those types of things happening with battery plants, you wouldn't necessarily describe them as common occurrences, right?
No, they're not common occurrences, and they're becoming increasingly rare. Because of the earlier battery styles, they've learned a lot about how to prevent that kind of thing. Battery chemistry has generally changed. Very few people are deploying the nickel, cobalt, manganese, lithium batteries. Those are the old ones that used to be kind of the only kind available. And it's the kind that's still in EVs or your phone or whatever, because they're very light and pack a lot of power. But they're also prone to something called thermal runaway, where the chemistry in the battery can start to heat up in a pretty broad range of conditions. And that's when you get into fires or explosions.
So, and that's the kind of thing that we see on the news with, you know, air travel, for example. And that's why they won't let you check any devices that have those batteries in them. They want them basically in the cabin, because if there's a problem, they want to be able to deal with it where they can get to it, right?
So all the big battery storage fires that you see in the news, those are older plants. They also figured out that they need to put temperature monitoring within each cell of batteries. And they figured out spacing to keep the different units apart.
So it keeps it a little cooler, for example, so that you don't start that process of thermal runaway. You'd be able to isolate the problem quicker.
Yeah, it's not even a matter of too much heat. Sometimes it can be too much cold. So a lower temperature range for the old style batteries.
Interesting.
The newer ones are called lithium, or LFP, which stands for lithium iron phosphate. And the phosphate suppresses temperature swings and fire as well. So they're less likely to have thermal runaway. They also have started putting monitoring within each cell so you can tell if it's starting to heat up. They can shut the whole thing down so it becomes stable again. And then there are other kinds of batteries, too, that are coming online. Iron-based batteries are amazing. There's iron flow and iron air. They're non-toxic. They're non-flammable. Iron Air can last days. So if we have power outages for days, it can supply power to the grid. Iron Flow, it's now getting to the point where it can pack a lot of energy into the same space that an LFP battery would take. So those are starting to become commercially available. And that's what we advocate for, the non-toxic, non-flammable type.
Yeah, I guess that would be my next question is, out of all these technologies, what are currently available? And for instance, if something about this Pittsfield generating plant were to be a conversion in the next, I don't know, 1 to 3 years, if that's even possible, you know, what type of technology might we see go into that plant? Could we see some of those more modern batteries that you just discussed be part of that, or would that maybe just be too cutting edge to get there?
It's being deployed. It's not a lot of them yet. I mean, they're just coming out of pilot phase and going into commercial phase, but it could be within that time frame, that maybe 3 to 5 year time frame. And especially Iron Flow batteries, you can pack enough power in there that you could replace that plant with the lot between Sobek and Merrill Road. And if that was where there was battery storage, that's all the space it would take. So we've been doing a study. We got hold of runtime data on the plant, seeing how much it power it supplies to the grid, and every hour of the day. So we get an idea of how long a run is and how much power they supply. And we could calculate from that to find out how much battery it would take. If they did go with LFP batteries, the lithium iron phosphate, the incident rate of that has dropped 98% since 2018. So they're a lot safer than they used to be.
Are these installations more common in other areas of the country? Are we just slow to get there? How quickly are these proliferating?
Pretty quickly. And even in Massachusetts, the batteries are starting to quietly take up a lot of space. So, and if you talk to people in the smaller towns, there's a lot of battery proposals because it's easier for them to chop down forest, which we also don't advocate for.
Right.
We advocate for brownfields, built environments first by every measure. It should never go in where, you know, they have to cut down forest or if it's near an aquifer or close to homes.
And that goes to the proposal right in Pittsfield that was recently set up and then I think turned down off of William Street, where, again, very close to an interconnect with the power company, which is probably necessary, right, for the battery storage, but also very, very close to homes and close to some natural resources back there as well, right?
Yeah. Near the power supply is not absolutely necessary, but you do end up taking more space for wires to be run, those substations. One of the things that we would like to see is put in storage as much as you can fit at the substation. It's already a disturbed environment.
Right.
Put it right there. It can connect right there. The one near Williams, we put in comments against it. It was poorly sited. It was not great for the neighborhood, not good for the aquifers. So you can put stuff, you can put batteries in places that are wrong, or you could put in really bad designs. And that's the thing to keep in mind. If you hear people advocating for batteries, remember that at least we're looking out for right place, right design if we advocate for them.
Yeah, it's kind of like a holistic, you have to take everything into account, right? It can't just be one thing which solves one problem and then creates three or four more.
Right. It's like solar. You don't want to cut down a lot of forest or take up a lot of farmland just for solar. You want to put it on disturbed spaces as well.
I still love the idea of solar on parking lots. I don't know why we're not doing more of that.
It costs more to build.
Is that right?
Yep. So if somebody's proposing a project, it costs them more to build the project. But it makes so much more sense. Yeah. And it actually stops heat island effect.
Right.
So if somebody's developing a building and they want to have solar, that's a good place to put it because it helps shade that heat island of the parking lot.
It's already an asphalt jungle, right? So why not just take advantage of that? But yeah, maybe someday we'll get there. Rose Wessel is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR Lee. And so we're talking about peaker plants and the particular one in Pittsfield. Just give us a bit of a history of that plant, because I remember it going in, and the proposals for it at the time was called Altresco. They were fairly controversial. It was going in as a cogeneration plant, right? As something that would help both the power grid and also GE with the steam needs, right? And that was before GE made that big pullback in Pittsfield. So it was right on that cusp of time where you could build something because it seemed to make sense, but then did it really make sense for the last 35 years?
No, it was only a year or two until, you know, between the plant opening and GE leaving.
Yeah.
So that cogeneration, if you're going to put in a big gas plant, cogeneration is actually a fairly efficient way to do it. But it's not needed for that anymore. So it's not supplying, it's not supplying steam to anything at this point.
No.
It's just a peaker plant supplying to the grid, yeah. Supplying electricity to the grid.
But think about all those buildings, though, all those GE buildings that have come down since the consent decree, right, in 1998. And that was only a few years after this plant was built. And just imagine all the steam and all the you know, all the good that it could have done in that time, but it was just not meant to be. It didn't happen.
Yeah. And even some cogeneration plants are starting to convert over to electric only. There's one in Boston that's a very similar kind of plant. It's the Kendall Station Power Plant is switching over to heat pump. It's a combination of heat pumps, flash boilers that use electrode plates, basically, to generate steam, and thermal storage. And by that doing that method, they won't be burning any fossil fuels by the time they're done converting to generate electricity.
And they'll still have all the capacity that they need?
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. And they also supply steam to large areas of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to stay a cogeneration plant for those steam customers as well.
Yeah. And tell us why there are steam customers. What do they use the steam for?
It's used to heat buildings. Yeah. It's used for cooling. It's used for industrial processes.
Uh-huh.
We were hoping to get Crane Paper when they were looking at a new boiler. We're like, wait, have you looked at this method over here that they're doing in Boston? They had already had their plans drafted up, so we couldn't convince them to do that. But it's something to keep in mind for when the old boilers start to kick out, maybe replace it with these electrified steam generation processes.
Interesting. Yeah, wouldn't have thought that electricity could have been involved in steam. You think of steam as, and again, what people have as a frame of reference probably is their own house. And if they ever lived in a house with radiators, right, that's a steam boiler usually, right? Something that's doing really, really sort of hot air, hot steam into the radiators and the old sound of the vent or whatever, you know, kicking off and things. It's nostalgic, I think, for a lot of people. And it was at one time a very good and efficient method of heating your house. I don't know about now.
It still is.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to the alternative of just burning fossil fuels to heat the space, it's somewhat more efficient and less emitting. But compared to no emissions, especially if you pair that electricity generation with solar offshore wind power, if the grid got flooded with offshore wind, we would have enough excess that it becomes really economical to go with electric steam generation.
Mm-hmm.
So the great thing about electrifying, it's just like, you know, going with an EV or electrifying your heating and cooking in your home and hot water heating, is if that's pulling from the grid is eventually getting more and more renewable generated. So eventually it all goes to zero emissions.
Right.
Yep.
And just refresh our memories a bit as to why a peaker plant of any kind, whether it's fossil fuel generated or a battery storage or other technology, why are peaker plants still needed? It sounds like they'll be needed for the future of the supply of electricity, right?
Yeah. Generally, you need something. You don't want to build a whole grid system for the absolute peak amount of electricity ever used. Peaks only happen a few times a year, and you can't have all the plants running all the time. There's too much electricity on the grid at that point. So what peakers do is supply power when all those other baseload plants are running at full tilt and there's still more demand. So it tends to be only a few hours in the evenings in summer, or a few hours when it's really cold in the winter, that these things run. And unfortunately, they keep around the old plants more often than not as peaker plants. So they tend to be really heavily polluting compared to the other ones. They also are the more expensive ones because of the way the market works. The grid market has them by the least expensive electricity being generated first. So as they fill those up, they go to more and more. As demand rises, they go to more and more expensive plants. And another quirk of the market is when they go to a higher paying plant, they don't just pay the higher amount for that new plant, they pay it to all the plants.
Oh, interesting.
So all the cheaper ones get more money as the more expensive ones come on. That's why prices spike so high. That's changes that we need at the grid level. Yeah. We need them to change that policy.
And those are things, obviously, also that affect our rates, the things that we pay, right? The cost to keep electricity flowing as we would expect it. And certainly nobody likes outages, and we certainly don't want an electric grid that is, undependable, right? We need to keep that dependability going. What is it they say when your internet goes out, you go back to the 1900s, but when your electricity goes out, you go back to the 1800s?
Yep.
Nobody wants to go back to the 1800s, right?
Yeah. And that battery storage is actually a better replacement than just peaker plants because they do other things as well. They help regulate the voltage and the amperage on the grid. That keeps it more stable. It also can come on in a split second as opposed to taking several hours to gear up.
Yeah, so, I would think that would be because they must be in tune with what the conditions are going to be. Like they listen to the weather like everybody does, and they know what a hot day and a cold day is going to be, right? And they say, okay, we better gear up here because we might be needed today. But then when it actually happens, it doesn't happen instantaneously with the gas-fired plants. They do have to ramp up a little bit. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, and it depends on how they're designed. I've gotten conflicting answers from owners and operators of Pittsfield Generating on what their ramp-up time is. I've heard anything from 6 to 12 hours that it needs to run before it's fully supplying energy. Yeah. And you can see it in the runtime data. It always starts at a low amount of energy going into the grid, and then it builds up over time. So. It's less efficient too at that point, because just like when you start your car engine, your emissions are highest when you're starting the car engine, and it runs more smoothly once it's up and running. So that's the other problem with fossil fuel plants, is not only is there ramp up time, but during that ramp up time, it's generating more pollution per megawatt supplied. Yeah.
And I think you've mentioned to me before, but just remind me that when you're looking at those three big stacks there in Pittsfield, which you can't miss, right? It's really kind of a feature of the skyline of Pittsfield now, those three stacks from that plant. You can kind of get your bearings on the city based on, that, which I'm sure was probably true in the Industrial Revolution, too, when you saw the smokestacks from the mills and the factories and things, right?
You can see them from Windsor.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. There's one point in Windsor when you're coming down the hill, you can see the stacks in the distance.
Yeah. But it's only when the plant is running at its sort of peak capacity when you start to see smoke coming out of those three. And then there's a couple of smaller stacks underneath, and those run more frequently, but they're not like the heavy pollution part, right?
Actually, it's the other way around.
Oh, no kidding.
The smaller stacks are the actual venting from the gas generators.
Okay.
And the big stacks are when they need to let off steam pressure.
Ah.
So when you see stuff coming out of the tall stacks, that's steam. Of course, we don't know what's in the water supply that they're using. Again, we've gotten conflicting information between operators and owners as to whether or not they're tapping into town water or well water. And if it's well water, of course, there's the PCB mounds there.
Right.
So we don't know exactly what's in the steam. Hmm. That's not been determined.
That's interesting, too. I guess we don't get all the answers sometimes unless somebody starts digging and finding out. And that's kind of the role that the Berkshire Environmental Action Team takes on many times, is to get that information, where otherwise it would just sort of settle in and everybody would just be fat and happy, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. We dive into a lot of spreadsheets and reports. So also, when those three stacks are running, when they're letting off steam, folks in the neighborhood report that it rumbles. It makes a heck of a lot of noise. To the point where people start calling, you know, friends that work in the gas industry and whatever, and say, hey, is this normal or should I be scared? It's a steam release is a huge blowdown, and it actually causes rumbling. Even when the plant isn't venting. We've been there when it's running, and you can feel a vibration like in the playground.
Wow.
Oh, it does rattle the neighborhood a fair amount.
So certainly a battery storage facility would not do that, fair to say. Now, Rose Wessel from BEAT, I know that recently you made a presentation to one of the boards at Pittsfield. I don't remember which one, the health committee.
The Public Health Committee.
Okay. And made a presentation there to this, and then they were supposedly forwarding it on to the city council to vote. How are those proceedings going?
They have gone. The city council voted unanimously to send a letter supporting decarbonization of Pittsfield generating to the Office of Energy Transformation. That's a Mass state agency, a fairly new one, that took on the peaker issue after talking with us. They took that on as one of their three main goals for transforming the energy system over to decarbonized. And the owners is Hull Street Energy. They've been working with them. The mayor is on one of the boards, going to meetings for that. We're going to working group meetings on figuring out the nuts and bolts of how decarbonization can happen. And they're looking at plants across the state, including Pittsfield Generating, to see if they can develop policy on how decarbonization can happen.
And so some of the regulations and the policies and stuff are still being developed at this point at the state level. How is that going, and what kind of impact will that have?
That's a tricky one. Governor Healey put forward a bill in 2024 streamlining the adoption of renewables and storage, which sounds like a great idea, but the way it's being done, it takes local control away for the larger projects. So smaller towns, like I've heard from folks in Beckett that they're looking at like four or five battery proposals. And if they're large enough, the state ends up deciding. They end up being the sole decider. They talk to the towns as, you know, reference and consultants, but the decision is up to the Energy Facility Siting Board and the DPU.
Okay. That's interesting, because I think, too, if you're a small town, right, and a big project comes your way, I'm thinking of a Beckett or Peru or, you know, Washington, one of the hill towns where they barely have anybody on staff sometimes, regardless of experts who could come in and help them decide how to site something, right? You almost want some more state help in that case, wouldn't you? I mean, they just sometimes I would imagine they'd be understaffed and under expertise to really navigate that.
Yeah, and one of the things in the regulation is a town can say, even for the smaller projects, they can say, we don't know how to handle this. Can you go ahead and do it? But towns also want some control over what gets built in their town.
Of course.
If all of a sudden Beckett is nothing but battery storage facilities, it's going to be a totally different town.
Right.
You're going to lose a lot of tourist dollars and campers and, you know, folks who come here for the wildness of this region. So there needs to be more back and forth. So there are some good things in the regulations that are being put forward. One of them is the ability to hand it over if you don't have staff. The other is there's a fund that will help small towns hire consultants. But there's no guidance on how to find reliable consultants. That's what we're running into now. We get approached regularly. It's like we have to Google just like everybody else to find out what consultants are there. And we don't have a lot of a, you know, much of a bead on who's a reliable consultant or who's going to say what's handier for the battery industry than the town.
Right.
So, we're working on talking with people that have worked with consultants to find out which ones are decent.
It's interesting because one of the things you mentioned, and we do have to go to our break here pretty soon, was, you know, you don't want Beckett or another Hilltown to just be all battery storage. And it reminds me of the thought of how, as much as we might be in favor of wind turbines or solar projects or battery or things like that, we do have to be careful out here in Western Massachusetts so that we're not the just the sort of energy provider for the rest of the state because we have all the land and they don't have any, right? So they're not building anything. They're just relying on us to do it. But that changes and shapes our existing natural resources and our beauty out here. We don't want to change that just so we can provide power to the other end of the state.
And it also conflicts with other state policy, which says that forests are a carbon sink that they're counting on to reach that zero emissions goal.
Sure.
So you can't take away the forest to put in solar and batteries and still use it as carbon sink.
Right. It's a delicate balance here, as everything, right?
So, yep.
Rose Wessel, the program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass, and a member of the Berkshire Environmental Action Team, is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. And we are going to take that top of the hour break right now and come back and talk about pipelines and offshore wind and a few other things that we'll get to. So we'll be right back after this on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR. FM. Stick around.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBRFM, for the love of radio.
El Departamento de Salud de Pittsfield realiza mensualmente clínicas de salud gratuitas en el Centro Cristiano, los apartamentos Edward Arms, Capitol Square y la Iglesia Congregacional del Sur. Ofrecemos chequeo de signos vitales, revisión de medicamentos, evaluaciones médicas y proveemos información sobre los recursos disponibles en la comunidad. Para información, llamar al 413-499-9411.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hi, it's Jen Glockner. I'm the director of the Office of Cultural Development for the wonderful city of Pittsfield, and I also host the Cultural Pittsfield radio show on WTBR. It airs every Friday at 8:30 in the morning. Stay tuned to learn all about the arts and culture scene for the city of Pittsfield and beyond. We hope you listen in every Friday at 8:30 on 89.7 FM WTBR.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we're back on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and 88.1 WSBR in Lee. Thanks for joining us here this morning on kind of our rainy and gray Wednesday morning. January 7th it is, and a little bit of ice there on the way in this morning. I don't know if that's let up or not since I've been on the air, but it looks kind of wet out there still. Definitely keep an eye out for that. There is a two-hour delay in the city for Pittsfield Public Schools this morning. Everyone reports 2 hours later than usual for that icing and slippery conditions that we had going overnight and into the morning. So definitely stay safe out there. Rose Wessel is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive from Berkshire Environmental Action Team, or BEAT. And we will be right back with our conversation with Rose right after we listen to what the rest of the weather forecast is here today from the National Weather Service. Here it is.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect until 11 a.m. EST this morning. Today, mostly cloudy. Snow, freezing rain with a chance of rain this morning, then a slight chance of rain and snow showers this afternoon. Little or no snow accumulation. Ice accumulation around a trace. Highs in the upper 30s. South wind around 5 miles per hour, increasing to west 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of precipitation 90%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Cold with lows in the upper 20s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, and I see the temperature up there right now is exactly 32 degrees in the city of Pittsfield, so it is at the freezing point. So if there is any water out there, certainly if it's on your walkway or your driveway, do be careful. It could be freezing. The roads, from what I found out on my way in, were pretty good. There are a lot of product down on the roads, some sand, some salt, keeping the slipperiness down. So even in my truck, I was not slipping and sliding all that much in most of Pittsfield, which was a great news to me coming into the studio this morning, thinking maybe I'll do this all from home today. But I didn't. I came in. But we got Rose to come in by Zoom. And thank you, Rose, for doing that today. Rose Wessel is the program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass, a part of the Berkshire Environmental Action Team. So thanks again for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's talk about pipelines. And again, a new administration this past year, definitely a change in terms of how the federal government sees environmental policy and, you know, petroleum, all those kinds of things, wind farms. How is that all changing right now? What does the climate look like 1 year into the Trump administration?
It's a throwback of about 10, 15 years.
Like Stranger Things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I need my bike back. About 12 years ago now, it was 2013, 14, 15, we had a lot of pipeline proposals. And these aren't just gas lines. These are big gas transmission lines. Mm. The way to think of it is it's the highways for natural gas as opposed to the little streets that go to your house. Mm.
And a lot of that changed when fracking started, right? When the idea of bringing natural gas out of the shale in Pennsylvania and places like that became technologically feasible, and it was sort of like a big revolution in that industry.
Yep. And there was one proposal in particular that spawned a lot of other proposals, and that was Constitution Pipeline. Mm. That's one that was slated to run from Pennsylvania, from the fracking fields, right from the gathering lines, from the fracking operations, to a huge gas hub just west of Albany in Wright, New York.
Okay.
And that spawned a lot of other proposals. That's where we got the Northeast Energy Direct, or NED, pipeline that was proposed to come up through the Berkshires and head over to another hub in the eastern part of the state.
Mm. And that did not happen, right?
That did not happen. Mm. We pushed back hard on that for about 2.5 years. And they finally withdrew their application. Folks say, well, it was the economics. It's like, yeah, well, the economics didn't go well because they couldn't get any traction. We had folks denying permission to survey. We were making the case to elected officials who understood that, yeah, this isn't going to make energy any cheaper. None of the pipelines have. We've actually had pipelines increase by about 40% since those years, just by incremental growth of the pipelines. And guess what? We're paying more than ever for the natural gas. So,
there's more capacity coming in, and yet the prices have not gone down.
Right. And doing that more again is not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how the economics work on this. So it also spawned growth on the Enbridge lines. We have Tennessee Gas and Enbridge pipelines coming into Massachusetts. And the new push now is to get that Constitution pipeline built again. Was said in January last year already that they wanted to rebuild the bring back the Constitution pipeline proposal. That one was also defeated. That was the New York State 401 water quality certificate. That's a state permit that pipelines need. New York State said, no, this is going to be harmful to our water supplies. You can't build it.
Okay.
And that's what stopped that pipeline from coming on. So without that coming in, and with all the policies from all the New England states changing to decarbonization, those pipeline proposals mostly went away. It was just small incremental builds since then. Mm-hmm. They wanted to start the Constitution, and by gum, they're getting it.
So this has changed now this year, right?
Yep.
This year.
This changed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what they did was they withdrew funding for offshore wind. And they're kind of using it as a bargaining chip when talking with all the governors in the Northeast. So it's all of New England, New York, and New Jersey. They've been talking to all the governors saying, if you just let us have those state permits for pipelines, you can get your funding back. And Governor Hochul made that deal. And the NESE pipeline, which is one that running from Pennsylvania to New Jersey to Long Island, that got all of its permits back. That was another one that got canceled by New York. And it's now all approved and going through. And on December 22nd, Constitution filed their application to build the Constitution pipeline again. So they're starting to set up those building pieces that are pushing gas towards the Northeast.
It feels like it would be a really bad idea if that's all we did. Like, in other words, if long term we didn't build any of these offshore wind farms, which ostensibly would change the mixture of energy available, right, and power available from fossil fuels to renewable sources, that would be a major change and a generational change in a lot of ways. So if you were to completely just swap and say, okay, we're going back to just natural gas or just oil or whatever it is, coal, I guess, has been brought back into the conversation too, which is crazy, right? Maybe I shouldn't give my opinion there, but it does seem a little, it seems like very 1800s thinking. But
coal is the worst you can do.
But what, okay, so will we see those wind projects return? That's the big question.
Yeah, since New Jersey and New York caved and said, yeah, we'll let you build a few pipelines, they did bring the funding back to most of the ones that got canceled. What happened was, as soon as the federal funding got canceled, some of the projects just said, nope, we're out of here, and packed up. And we don't know if they're going to be able to come back if all that funding comes back. The other thing that they've done is they said they'd give the money back, but then they put a stop work order in because they came up with another pretext that wind turbines interfere with flight communications, and it was hazardous for the military. So they gave the money back for some of the projects, but then they put a stop work order on again. So it's a little bit like the school bully, you know. He presses you for your lunch money, and you think, okay, I'll just give him the money, get it over with. He's going to come back again because he knows that works. So that's what's going on that front.
And that could be very difficult because in the long term, we know that that's necessary to move the needle on many of these projects and ideas. And the climate isn't getting any better, right? We need to make that change. Now, there's also sort of the idea of, all of the above. where we do need a mixture of energy sources, including renewables and some fossil fuels and some transition time. Because right now, if we wanted to switch over to all renewable energy for our country, that just wouldn't work at this moment, right? There's a has to be a time and a place for that. But the question is, how long?
Well, it's not so much that we need more of the fossil fuel infrastructure. We need to be building wherever there's a need for electric generation, we need to be building renewables. So that would push the transition along. We probably can't cut out all of the gas right now, as much as environmentalists like us would like to see us halt, you know, yesterday. But we should be phasing in as fast as possible. And we shouldn't be building any more new fossil fuel infrastructure at this point.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be adding to, we should only be subtracting from what we're already using. And one of the things that's been going on is Enbridge pipelines. That's known in New England as the Algonquin Transmission System. Very kind of them to name it after the Algonquin people. I'm sure,
they appreciate it.
Yeah. That and the Iroquois pipeline system. Don't borrow their names, please, but they have. So we tend to call it the AGT, the Algonquin Gas Transmission System.
Okay.
They've been expanding that in little bits. They actually put through a fairly big proposal called Project Maple. You might have heard us talk about that before. That didn't actually happen, but what they did was build a few small expansions along the existing line. So they took out a pipeline under the Saconnet River under Narragansett Bay and put in one twice as big. They took a regular valve station and turned it into a meter station, which is a larger facility that helps with the flow of gas more and increases capacity. In Cape Cod, the bridges are going to be replaced.
Right.
There were pipelines on those bridges. So they were supposed to detach from the bridges for safety reasons and go under the canal. But they're putting in bigger systems. So they're slowly increasing capacity here and there. And then more recently, they came up with another project called the AGT Enhancement, the Algonquin Gas Transmission Enhancement. That's in Mendon, Mass., that area, parts of Rhode Island, and a compressor station in Connecticut. And there they're planning on taking out pipelines and putting in much bigger pipelines, more than double the size, or laying other pipelines next to the existing ones. So they're increasing capacity that way.
Now, all of this infrastructure build out that they're doing with these pipelines and the valve stations and the meter stations and all this other stuff. And also, even more locally, when you see our local gas company repairing or putting in new lines and things like that underground, all of those things have an impact on ratepayers as well, right? Like they're replacing and improving facilities, which you would expect them to want to do. But that seems to be a major driver of where our costs are coming from.
Yep. And there was a there's another large program called the GSEP. It's the gas system. Oh, I can't remember what EP. It's basically fixing all the leaks in the distribution systems.
Which is a good idea, right? I think everyone will stipulate that we don't want gas leaks. We see what gas leaks can do.
Exactly. And there are some in Boston that have been leaking so long that they actually threw them a disco party. they said this leak has been here since the Bee Gees, and they had a disco party.
Nice.
So, you want to replace those, but it got wrapped in with taking up all of the system, not just fixing the leaks, but taking up and replacing all of the system with newer stuff. And that's a huge investment into something that's by law is supposed to be going away. So you don't want to have a full replacement project. You want to fix the leaks.
Right.
Again, it's that investment. What do you want to invest in? You want to be investing in converting people over to electrification, not to building out systems that already exist. And that's what this is doing, is increasing the capacity on the larger transmission system. That's that large highway of gas that gets to the streets of the local distribution systems.
And we have some major pipelines coming through the Berkshires as it is, right?
Yeah. The Tennessee Gas ones especially. They come in at Richmond, and I think there's three now. The new one that got put down was the Connecticut Expansion Project. They did 2 miles through Oda State Forest of putting that in. And A.G. Healy at the time didn't contest it. She was afraid that it was too small a project to risk losing that court battle. And I said, by conceding, you've already lost that court battle. But she didn't see it that way. She didn't want to risk the precedent of losing in court on a small project.
Right. Everything's a calculation.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to determine what's the best path. But that's one that to this day I still don't agree with. And lately she's adopted an all of the above approach, saying that, well, maybe these gas expansions are needed. So it's probably a good thing that they're going ahead with it. And that's not the way to go. One of the problems with the investment of ratepayers in these systems, too, is the gas companies make their most of their money off of the infrastructure build, not the selling of gas. They have a 13 to 14% guaranteed rate of return on their infrastructure investments. And that's on the backs of ratepayers.
That's so interesting. That reminds me of what it's like running a gas station and convenience store, right? Is that you're not making any money selling selling the gas. You're making money on cigarettes and lottery tickets and convenience store items.
Yep. The more of those kinds of trinkets you put in, the more you invest in that infrastructure, the more money you're going to make on that. So, yeah, that's very much it. And nobody's rates are going down because we keep paying for these infrastructure expansions. And actually, there was a rate hike proposal filed with DPU for Berkshire Gas. They were going to raise rates up to 26%, was 23 to 26%, with the lowest income customers getting the highest rate hikes. And luckily, we have a really good DPU right now, Department of Public Utilities. They saw that proposal and some other ones. Liberty Utilities actually wanted to raise it by 55%. So whatever you're currently paying for gas, imagine paying 55% more. And they said, look, something's going on here. We need an investigation. So the rate hike case has been frozen for now, and it's going into an investigation. So thank them for putting on the brakes. We'll be hearing more about it as that proceeds, and we'll be putting that up on No Frack Gas and Mass and the Beat newsletter and so on.
Yeah, nobody likes those big, huge increases. I think everybody expects things to go up a little bit, you know, along with everything else. But when you get 55%, that's an eye-popper. So the pipelines, you do have a webinar coming up in February, right, where you're going to be discussing what we were just talking about?
Yep. No date or time yet, but it's slated for February. And you can always track the info on pipelines. We keep it updated on the nofrackgasandmass.com website. We also have a tiny URL for that page. It's tinyurl.com/NFG for No Frack Gas New Projects. And that brings you straight to the pipeline page so you can look at all the different ones that are going forward. Like I said, Williams has filed December 22nd, right before the holidays, hoping nobody would notice, for a very large pipeline that could trigger more pipelines down the road.
So you definitely have your battles in front of you for sure during this time. If it was never easy before, it's certainly not going to get any easier now. Rose Wessel is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. She is the program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass, a program of Berkshire Environmental Action Team. And we've been talking about lots of different stuff here this morning. A few minutes left of the show now. And let's talk about Breathe Easy Berkshires, because I know that's something that we've discussed here on the show in the past. And just give us a quick overview of the program and where that's headed.
Yeah, you've had Andrew and Drake on. They're the guys who are running the Breathe Easy Berkshire's air quality monitoring program in Pittsfield. It's going to be winding up this spring. Our EPA grant is winding up. We will still have handheld monitors for anything that we need to check afterward. But Andrew is still gathering data, but Drake is working on the health study, and he's really interested in interviewing people in Pittsfield about health impacts, their health conditions that they deal with, and how air quality might be affecting that. So if you want to do an interview, he would very much appreciate it. You can contact him at his email is drake@thebeatnews.org. And that's B-E-A-T, thebeatnews.org.
Well, I think we should definitely have him on the show and talk about that more. Will the program continue past the grant? Will there be a way to continue some of the work that they've been doing?
Some of the work, yeah, definitely. We learned a lot of things, like when there's wildfire smoke, the outdoor programs in the summer for kids, they really need to have an indoor backup so they're not out running around in bad air quality.
Right.
We also learned the limits of the fire department. When there's a fire, they can test air quality around that region, but not across the broader region. And one of the things that we'll be losing when the EPA grant finishes is our stationary monitors.
Oh, that's too bad.
Those weren't a purchase. They were a rental, and they handled the data. But we will have the handhelds. So if there's an air quality concern, we can come out and take readings and find out what's going on.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear, at least. And it was an impactful program for sure. And it, if nothing else, it focused people on the need and the idea that air quality is something you should be paying attention to.
Yeah, and Drake and Andrew also worked with BRPC to go into schools and teach the kids how to use the air quality monitoring as well. Yeah. So they're learning some citizen science skills.
And speaking of the schools, by the way, as I'm looking down, I just got an update that the Pittsfield Public Schools are now canceled for the day. So that was a two-hour delay earlier in the day. I just got an update that all schools are now canceled for the day. And I'm looking out the window here at the WTBR studios, and I am seeing it turn to snow. So I did mention that it was 32 degrees, and certainly things could change, and certainly it did. We started seeing the big snowflakes coming down, and I'm sure that's going to complicate things for our road crews for the rest of the day. But just again, if you're just joining us here on Morning Drive, Pittsfield Public Schools now canceled for the day. So Rose Wessel, we have other beat announcements coming up. You have a Green Drinks event coming up.
Yeah, Green Drinks. That's where we talk about all things environment, energy, all kinds of stuff. There's one coming up next week. If you want to attend in person, it's at Dewey Hall in Sheffield. But there's also the option to go in by Zoom. And they're going to be doing a presentation. It's Trout Unlimited will be the speaker. And they'll be speaking about this summer's stream restoration project on the Conkapot River. So go
that's
to
down in Great Barrington, Sheffield area, Ashley Falls, that area.
Yep. So if you want to sign up for that, you can RSVP on the website. That's thebeatnews.org. And look for the events page and you'll find Green Drinks there. And we also just have a lot coming up in 2026. We started mapping out how this year is going to look. We're going to be doing a road ecology event. Biodiversity Day, river cleanups, webinar on fish stocking, which turns out is an environmental problem that needs to be addressed.
See, I did not know that. And we had a little conversation before we started the show, and I'd love to do maybe a bit of a show on that. Maybe we can arrange that at some point, that stocking a river for fish that will be normally caught by fishermen, recreational methods isn't always all that great.
It can be done the wrong way, right? They're pouring a lot of non-native fish into the river in quantities that most of them just end up dying in the river. So we're working on helping shape the reform to that and push for that. We're also going to be doing a pipelines webinar, as you mentioned, and a lot of other events. So always check thebeatnews.org, the events page, or sign up for Beat's newsletter. And you'll get word of all the stuff coming up.
Quickly, what's a road ecology event?
I had to ask the same question. I was not in on the planning on that. It's basically what happens around roadways. So what sort of species are around there?
Okay.
What sort of impacts do road designs have? And it's looking at that whole part of our environment.
Fascinating. good stuff to know. And this is the kind of thing that you get when you're tuned into the kinds of things that Berkshire Environmental Action Team is doing on a regular basis. So, Rose Wessel, I just want to say thank you again for joining us here on the show this morning. In inclement weather, we got you on the show anyway, and we really appreciate that. We'll do an update at some point in the future and do some more shows.
Yeah, thanks for accommodating me on Zoom.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, everybody, stay safe out there today. Weather is not great, so... we'll see how that all goes. I guess we're getting used to that now here in the Berkshires for this winter. It's one of those winters. So we will see you again tomorrow. Howard Herman's on the show with me tomorrow live here in the studio, all about sports. We'll talk to you then. Take care.